Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a podcast by two people who are sort of ashamed to have a podcast about Star Trek The Next Generation. Yeah. I am your host, Adam Pranica, and with
I didn't know we were going with our true identities here.
I just sort of assumed we would use our real names. Well,
let's just live our shames here.
All right.
I'm Benjamin.
We could just edit that out. Let's just edit that out. We'll have to pick new names for episode two.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, that could be a trope of the show, is that we have different identities each time.
I think that's a great idea. Yeah. Let's start right now.
Okay. Before we started recording, I was telling you that I was just among some friends, and my wife said Ben has to go watch an episode of Star Trek so he can record a podcast about it later. And I felt kind of embarrassed. I told her not to tell people that.
But, very specifically?
Yeah, but I love Star Trek, and I guess I shouldn't be ashamed of it, but I am a little bit.
I think the show, if anything, is going to reveal something very shameful about both of us, which I think is just the useless forensic knowledge that we have about this show.
Yeah.
That we just have on tap.
Right.
And at the ready. Like, I can drop this knowledge pretty easy, and I haven't seen these episodes in years and years.
Yeah.
And that's something that gives me personally great shame.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could have memorized some Shakespeare plays, or
Ben, I don't have my wife's phone number memorized, and I remember very clearly scenes from the first episode of this show that I haven't seen in. How old is this show? When was the first episode? Like 25 years ago?
Yeah, I'm gonna guess we're looking at an 86 or an 87 as the. This is something we probably should know. Yeah.
September 28th, 1987.
Nice. Yeah, and so I think the premise of our podcast, at least so far, is basically this: we are going to watch every single episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation in chronological order. And I think we reserve the right to change the premise of the show at any point.
At any point that suits us.
Yeah, but for now, I think we're focused on the crown jewel in the series of Star Trek franchises, Star Trek: The Next Generation.
I think I want to piggyback on that comment just a little bit, Ben, because I think we differ quite a bit in terms of our hope for this show's popularity. I personally hope that no one listens.
Yeah, that's a
and this is basically got like the vanity press of podcasts.
Yeah, right.
Because I never want my wife to say something about me as shamefully as yours said about you.
Yeah.
In Mixed Company.
Yeah, that was a real surprise. And
have you ever felt less affection from her than in that moment?
You know, it was. I guess she kind of knows who she married. She wasn't saying it unaffectionately. She was saying it in sort of the same way as a mom would make a comment about you transitioning.
Ben's going to go play with his model trains.
Right, yeah. You know, in front of the cool kids that you don't want knowing that you still have a model train in the basement.
Well, if anyone is still stuck around through this this now 5-minute preamble, you're free to leave. You're under no obligation to stick with us.
But for those of you who are bought in, let's start talking about season one, episode one of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So I think when we talk about the story, I think one of the things I wanted to talk about with you was this story a good choice for the pilot episode of a science fiction series? I think it's super weird.
It is super weird. I have very strong feelings about the character of Q, who is prominently in parts of this story, and is kind of the only part of this story that is providing any danger or suspense.
Yeah.
But I'm much more interested in the Enterprise coming up against the ethical and moral quandaries of dealing with species that are equivalent technology or less technology than them, but, you know, dealing with just kind of arbitrary deus ex machina god characters never kind of floats my boat.
Sure.
But it's also just, like, so silly. Like, so the Enterprise is supposed to go out to this Farpoint station, and they're sort of stopped mid-space by this all-powerful Q entity, and they're transported to this 2079 courtroom, I guess. That it actually seems like kind of a fun place, like, despite the fact that they're meting out a very brutal form of justice. It seems like a lot of cosplaying going on.
Some little people sprinkled in.
Yeah, yeah, and soldiers that are doing nose drugs to give them the will to kill, I guess. It's so weird. It's like the actions that they take in going to Farpoint are going to determine whether or not the human race is allowed to continue by this all-powerful being. But I never really connect with the idea that Q is trying to kill all humans, and I feel like in the script sort of obfuscate whether it's all humans or just the Enterprise, because the Enterprise is sort of a stand-in for all humans. In the context of this episode, they're being stopped from going, like, further than mankind has ever gone before because the Q has an axe to grind.
And stopped, mind you, by, like, a giant electrical Pendleton blanket, like, that's like flatly laid out in front of them. Like,
yeah.
It doesn't make any sense why an omnipotent alien would build
a cyclone fence in space.
Yeah, exactly. I don't get that. That's one of many things that just doesn't make sense in this episode.
Right. And Q is like, his main, like, personal attack is to freeze you, which never happens again. Like, Q appears like a whole bunch more times in the franchise, and I don't think he ever freezes anybody ever again.
I think it's because the costume department just ran out of fire extinguishers.
Yeah. There's one pretty cool shot when he, like, magically thaws Tasha Yar back out, and they do, like, a really solid crossfade between her being frozen and her being alive.
Yeah, that was super well done, which, you know what, to me, only made the scene afterwards where Patrick Stewart is, like, half of his head is in a vignette.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That only makes that scene not make sense at all from a technical standpoint. Like, they can pull off a transition that dusts the snow off of Tasha Yar, but they can't have Patrick Stewart just framed up properly to deliver lines. And like, his scene is, like, over a minute long. They keep cutting back to him, and half of his head is dark.
One thing this scene does do is set up the premise that Picard is a skilled orator and lawyer, essentially, and that comes back several times in the series, where, you know, he's asked to argue in a court of law of one caliber or another, and he always does well. But basically, they convince the Q to judge them not based on the actions of their forebears, but based on their actions in the coming mission.
Don't judge us by our past behavior, but by our future potential.
And I should say, I guess, but by this time, they've separated the saucer section from the star drive, which is a scene that is set up as though it's going to be very suspenseful. you know, when they ask Data if it can be done, and he says it's not advisable, but it's possible. There's zero margin for error. And then instead of playing suspenseful music and playing that scene for suspense, they just play the title theme, and it's like really triumphant and completely non-suspenseful.
And they play it all the way through.
Yeah,
they play the entire track.
Yeah.
Can you think of another example of this in any other show ever?
No. They feel triumphant that they've been able to make a model that comes apart in two pieces.
Also, like, does the risk seem worth it to you at any point? Like, the reason they're doing this is to get the women and children away from the danger. But they're doing this process for the very first time. Data has said that it's terrifically dangerous to do
right.
it at this speed.
They right, and how can they possibly say
both parts of the ship?
Right, which is the worst choice? Like, they don't have any anything to base that decision on.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense.
It makes zero sense. We fade out for a commercial break, and we fade back up, and Commander William Riker is wandering around Farpoint, meeting the guy who's in charge, Zorn, and then, you know, meeting a couple of the other characters who we haven't met yet. And boy, is he a handsome devil, William T. Riker.
I think he establishes right away that he's the sexual icon character of the show.
Yeah.
I think, you know, during many of his interactions, there's sort of an innuendo. The women look at him as he leaves in
right.
a very suggestive way.
Absolutely.
It's really in the forefront in a fun way, I think.
Yeah.
I think if you're reading for the part of Commander Riker, I think you have to be excited about your potential as an actor to maybe have some makeout scenes.
Do some sweet makeouts. Have some sweet MO seshes.
This is also the scene where Wesley tries to hook him up with his mom, right?
Yeah, that happens. And then we're introduced to Geordi LaForge, who runs up and says that he's urgently wanted on board the Enterprise. And this is when Riker first meets Captain Picard. They've never met before. And, man, Picard big dogs the shit out of Riker in this scene. Like, Riker comes on board the battle bridge of the star drive section, and Picard doesn't even turn and look at him for, like, the first couple of minutes of the scene. It is ridiculously uncomfortable.
Yeah, I mean, Riker's first interaction with him is with the back of his bald head.
Yeah, he comes on board and Picard basically says, like, we're in some shit already. Like, go watch this monitor and get caught up.
Watch the previously on.
Yeah. Yeah. And it totally just, like, watches, like, the first half of the episode on a TV while like, some other stuff is going on in the foreground. Like, they just kind of, like, fade out and he's like, sitting back there watching TV. Oh, man.
It's so awful.
Yeah. So Riker gets caught up and he quickly agrees with the captain that shit is popping off. And Picard kind of continues to big dog him and says, like, okay, the saucer section's back. Go ahead and put us back together manually. And everybody's terrified that that's going to go wrong. So they play the reconnecting of the two parts of the ship for like half of the suspense that they should have played the separating part for.
And keep in mind, like, the stakes are just as high. And for
right.
some reason, Picard big dogs him into doing it manually, whatever that means.
Right.
We soon find out that reconnecting the saucer and star drive section manually involves just telling O'Brien and Data how fast to go and
right.
at what angle to approach. It's the most low stakes manual way of doing it, things ever. And when he does it successfully, everyone like turns around and looks at him admiringly, like, oh, my God, you're... Your instructions
oh,
were so clear.
He told us to turn 3 degrees to the left like a pro, like a fucking pro.
Oh, man. Like, just further establishing, like, you know, Picard might be big dogging him right now, but, like, we know who the swinging dick of the bridge crew is, and it's definitely Riker William T.
Right. There's then a scene where Picard and Riker are, like, meeting up in the observation lounge. And Picard continues to, like, really be a shithead to Riker about this issue of the captain not going on away missions, which is basically just a scene to establish that, unlike the original series, the captain will not be constantly in needless harm. And then they also like plant that Picard hates children in this scene.
Ben, I've got to ask you something before we get off this scene that has just, I can't get it out of my head. I'm going to ask you a question and then I'm going to support the statement. All right.
Okay.
Does Riker have any reason to believe that Picard is not a pedophile based on what he tells him in that room? Because the way he says it...
Starfleet has given me a ship with children aboard.
Yes, sir.
And I don't feel comfortable with children.
And the way he acts towards Wesley when he finally goes into the bridge later. Like, yeah. Do you remember what he says?
I knew your father, Wesley.
It's a classic get in the van line. It's, hey, boy, I know your father.
Yeah.
It's okay.
Want to look around?
I mean,
it's pretty messed up. And
yeah.
If you were interviewing for a job, Ben, and like upon getting that job, your new boss,
the boss
is like,
stood
oh, yeah.
staring out the window saying,
I don't feel comfortable with children.
How is that not a classic, I'm a pedophile, but I don't want to tell you I'm a pedophile sort of move?
It is a full-blown classic, I'm a pedophile move. And boy, it's given me a lot to think about. The only two scenes that I think we really need to touch on before we get to sort of the climactic events are the scene where Riker finds Data in the holodeck, which is our first introduction to the idea that the Starship Enterprise has a magical hologram room where you can be swept away to anywhere. And Data is attempting to whistle Pop Goes the Weasel, I think.
That's a theme that Riker knows very well.
Right.
who's known for popping his weasel in a manual fashion.
Sure. And Wesley Crusher comes in and slips into the drink, and Data pulls him out with his superhuman strength. So we get a lot of like information about how Data works, because Riker doesn't quite buy that Data's rank is real, and then they all leave the holodeck together, and Picard discovers that Wesley Crusher is getting his ship wet with the holographic water that he absorbed.
Yeah, I mean, we realize Data's waterproof also. That's an important part of his character development, I think.
Yeah, he never sheds a tear and then immediately rusts out. The special effects in the scene are great. The holodeck door disappearing. It's probably like as well done as it's done in the entire series in this scene.
Yeah.
Does a great job of kind of planting the potential of this thing without blowing it in the first go.
It's almost the most fantastic thing about the show. Like,
yeah.
As a kid, when I was watching this, I was like, I was just as enthralled by the idea of like being in a spaceship and going anywhere in the spaceship. But the holodeck is almost more fantastic because you can go anywhere and be anyone.
Yeah.
Like, why wouldn't you spend all your time in there? How did these people get anything done as long as there was a holodeck around?
Yeah. And this is another thing that's like sort of, this is like Riker's first experience of a holodeck. When he first goes on, he's like, oh yeah, like I've read about this. And then like Data demonstrates that one of the walls is holographic and like throws a rock at it and it fuzzes out. But then like, I think by like season three, like holodeck technology is like super mainstream. Like everybody's just like over it, you know. It's not like, it doesn't like wow anybody's pants off that it exists the way it does in this first episode, which maybe a little bit of a misstep on the part of the writers.
Yeah, I just don't understand how is that not the heroine of the 24th century? Like, you're constantly trying to chase the dragon of the coolest thing you could possibly imagine coming true in the holodeck.
The hottest person that you could have totally consequence-free sex with.
I mean, there's no chance that Riker isn't immediately walking back into the holodeck and then creating a pig pile of like 40 alien women. Just
yeah.
Like, yeah, it's probably filthy and disgusting.
Yeah. So the other scene that we should just touch on briefly is the cameo from DeForest Kelly as Bones McCoy, doctor of the Enterprise from the original series, in very scary old man makeup.
Yeah, he didn't age very well.
No. And the only thing that's really worth mentioning here is that it's a hilarious scene where he comments on how much Data is exactly like a Vulcan and then says, "Well, the ship has the right name. You treat her like a lady, and she'll always bring you home." Which is just such a weird line.
Were you creeped out at McCoy calling Data boy like a plantation owner?
Yeah, it was a little...
He calls him boy like 10 times.
I don't see no points on your ears, boy.
Yeah, like a plantation owner or just like a modern cop interacting with a person of color. Just an upsetting, like, condescension that didn't seem super warranted.
Didn't seem in his character either.
Yeah.
My love is a people long until for that which longer nurses the disease. Tell me more, you'll have to go again.
I think that we should probably just kind of get to the climax here, which is the whole question that they've been asking at Farpoint Station is how did these aliens who all look homeless build this fantastic paradise-like station, and then why are they still dressed like they're homeless when they're living in the space station?
I didn't think they were homeless. I thought they were related to Billy Crystal's character in The Princess Bride.
Oh yeah, maybe a bit of both, but things just seem a little bit too good to be true, which is a great like Star Trek-like conflict to have. So they keep having to like have Q pop up on the view screen of the Enterprise and go, remember, there are stakes, blah, blah, blah. But
yeah, the one weird thing about Star Trek is when things become too gooder to be truer than their normal life.
Which is already.
Which is amazing.
Yeah. But they discover that, in fact, the space station is one of a pair of huge spacefaring space jellyfishes, mm-hmm. and the Bondi people of Deneb 4 have essentially enslaved one of them to be a space station, which is a really crazy concept that they don't really explain much.
Like, yeah, how do they bring it down to the surface?
How do they brought this giant space jellyfish that's supposed to be 12 times the size of the Starship Enterprise, and then coaxed it into being a space station instead of being a jellyfish somehow?
Especially given like old Bandy Town is like Deadwood.
Yeah.
It's like sticks and wheelbarrows.
Yeah, and like everything is like stone construction with like heavy wooden doors. Like it's a real weird like halfway technologized like Middle Ages type of place. Like they go to see Zorn, the administrator's in his office at one point, and the like huge heavy wood doors with cast iron fittings like automatically swing open like any doors in Star Trek would, and you're like, how did they open? Like there's no technology in this whole fucking place, and then just suddenly the doors open.
Did you also get a kick out of the like the squid that they trapped and turned into the station gets free?
This is another like one of the like great special effects in this episode. This it sort of shows up looking like the one that's not imprisoned is shows up looking like a spaceship that might be like a lamp that you buy in the Sharper Image, but then it flips over and it looks like a jellyfish, and it's like a really good like transition effect that they pulled off.
I thought the ship looked like Simon.
Oh yeah,
which made it hilarious when Worf goes like, "Yeah, we scanned the ship and it looks like nothing that has ever been found before, and it is the most plain Jane.
It's like
like by the book UFO drawing of what a UFO would look like ever."
But so they realize that what is keeping the other alien on the planet's surface is that it doesn't have enough energy. So they modify a phaser and fire the energy beam until it turns into a similar but different color jellyfish and flies off. And this is a moment where I really wish that they would show what was going on actually on the station, because when they fire that phaser, I just wanted to like cut to the surface with people like running and screaming like, ah!
Yeah, when they open up the Ark in Raiders of the Lost Ark, basically everyone has to melt at that moment.
Right.
It's the murder of millions of people.
Yeah, which they don't seem to address the fact that people live there and they do this. And then you know, the two aliens meet, and Counselor Troy, the half Betazoid ship's counselor, is there to tell us what emotions to feel about that.
I thought it was interesting that in the future, in the 24th century, that one of these squid ships was pink and one of them was blue, just so the idiot viewer could understand, like,
one's a boy and one's a girl.
Gender normative alien species.
Yeah. Yeah. Although the one that was coming to the rescue was the pink one. So that's pretty cool. That's pretty advanced.
Right. And they touch dongs to say hello again.
These early episodes do feature some of the dudes in dresses characters that you see in the background. There's like a short mini skirt Starfleet uniform that Troy is wearing prominently in the foreground. But there's a couple of shots of Farpoint Station where there'll be like three or four dudes walking around in mini skirt dresses. And that's something that they abandoned pretty early on. But like these early episodes, I really relish that.
They really missed an opportunity to stick Dr. McCoy in one of those during his tour of the new ship.
Yeah, yeah. A real
shame. Could you imagine his old balls dangling below the fringe of that thing?
Darmok and Jalad at Tanagra.
Personal grooming is less about something I do for myself, even though there are myriad reasons for that, and more about my consideration for other people who have to look at me, be around me, and on special occasions, love me physically. And when it's clear my front and backyards are becoming overgrown and unsightly, I'll break out the mower, the Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra from Manscaped. This Lawnmower 5.0 Ultra is really something else. This trimmer features two interchangeable next-gen skin-safe blade heads, a standard one for taking a little off the top, a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Listen, spring cleaning doesn't just apply to your nether regions. Get the full grooming experience with Manscaped's signature Beard Hedger Pro Kit and Handyman Electric Face Shaver. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVS at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants, right?
Put your best foot forward and present your new business project or political thing as well as you possibly can on the internet. How do you do that? Not through some cookie cutter form on a social media website or trying and failing to code a pretty website yourself. No, you go to Squarespace, start using their completely new guided design system, Squarespace Blueprint, which helps you choose from professionally curated layouts and styling options that help you build a unique online presence from the ground up that is tailored to your brand or business. Squarespace has been a super loyal sponsor of The Greatest Generation. We hope you will give them a try. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second and go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Uh, Well, Adam, this is the part of the show where we'll talk about what the next episode is and what we can remember about it. And also, so one power we have given ourselves in this series is that we each have a single veto over an episode per season. So there's 7 seasons of Star Trek: The Next Generation. There's some real turkeys in the list of episodes. There's like 170 something episodes of this show. And we would probably kill ourselves if we had to watch the 14 worst episodes among those. So we each have a veto, and we'll discuss what the next episode is and whether either of us wants to invoke our veto.
I think so, that's a great idea.
Yeah. So the next episode is The Naked Now, and it's let's see. The Enterprise encounters a research ship where the personnel are all found dead, and they quickly become infected with the same affliction, one that is similar to that suffered by the crew of James T. Kirk's USS Enterprise decades before. Yeah, I don't really remember this episode that well based on that description, but I don't think I would invoke my veto. I think it's like a Roddenberry script, so that's always fun for me. How about you?
I remember nothing about this episode based on your episode capsule, but I clicked forward in Wikipedia to see how it was received.
Yeah.
And 2 sentences stick out to me. The initial reaction of some fans was dismay. And and however you slice it up, this episode is pretty awful.
Well, that to me means we definitely have to watch
it. Yeah, I think in a lot of ways the bad episodes are going to be more funny to us than the good ones.
Well, I think that we should probably call it a night for this episode. But I've had a real fun time recording the as poorly planned out and poorly thought out first episode of the Greatest Generation as the first episode of Star Trek: The Next Generation.
Yeah, I think if there's one thing we learn from this, it's that we can't promise it's going to get any better.
Yeah. We'll do our best, though.
Yeah, I think this is fun. I hope no one hears this ever.
Yeah. Well, I've been Ben Harrison.
All right, I've been Adam Pranica, and this has been The Greatest Generation, Season 1, Episode 1.
Live long and prosper.
I'm not going to say that.